Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Some gifts just keep on giving. When my daughter Bella was, I don't know, 1.5, 2 years old, we gave her a blanket, a small one. And for whatever reason, this became her special blankie. I mean, she took it everywhere, like Linus in the Charlie Brown cartoons. Now, when she was 9, her appendix burst and she was in the hospital for a spell, and of course she had to have her blanket, which by this point was no longer recognizable as a blanket. So, at one point, the orderly comes in to clean up the room and naturally reaches for this disgusting pile of fibers before my wife stops her and says, "No, no, that's her special blanket." To which the orderly replies, and I quote, "That ain't no blanket, it's a collection of string." Well, the Beatles are a gift that keeps on giving. But the Beatles story is also getting a little frayed around the edges, let's say. I mean, what else is there to say about them? Then I heard that they'd made a documentary about the Beatles' secretary. Really? Is this what we've come to? A documentary about a band's secretary. Well, you know what? It's actually a great story. And later on the show, you will meet this secretary, Frida Kelly, or Good Old Frida, as the movie is called. Plus, we'll have live music from the indie rock band Deer Tick. But first, speaking of movies and great stories... The 1984 film Paris, Texas was memorable for many things. Wim Wenders' magical vision of the American West, Ry Cooder's lonely and evocative score, and a career-defining performance by Harry Dean Stanton. Silent for much of the movie, he basically revolutionized Hollywood's expectations of what a leading actor role could be. Harry Dean Stanton also served as a kind of coked-up nihilist Yoda to Emilio Estevez in the film Repo Man, came to a bad end in the movie Alien, and sang an old folk song to Paul Newman in Cool Hand Luke. But it turns out that singing plays more than just a bit part in the life of Harry Dean Stanton. A new documentary called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction, is frequently punctuated by the actor singing a variety of older songs. Harry Dean Stanton joins us today. Harry, welcome to Soundcheck.
Oh, thank you.
This is a remarkable film by Sophie Huber, and it sort of leads to the question of how musical has your life been? I mean, did you grow up singing and playing?
I used to sing when I was 6 years old. People, when the family would leave the house, I'd get up on a stool and sing.
What kind of stuff?
T for Texas, T for Tennessee, T for Thelma, the gal that made a wreck out of me. I was in love with my babysitter. She was 18. I was 6.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Thelma. That gal that made a wreck out of me.
That's the great Jimmy Rogers with the song Blue Yodel No. 1, also known as T for Texas. I'm here with Harry Dean Stanton, who's been acting in films since the 1950s and is now the subject of the documentary Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. So, Harry, you grew up in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Did you play the guitar, the harmonica from an early age?
No. I didn't pick that up till a few years later.
The film begins with you singing Blue Bayou, and then later on you sing this Spanish song, both of which seem to have a kind of theme of homesickness, which is kind of interesting given the fact that, you know, we're seeing you drive around in L.A., Hollywood, etc. You know, is there a kind of, I don't know, do you feel the pull of Kentucky during your long years in L.A.?
The pull of Kentucky?
Yeah.
No, I don't think in those terms.
So the homesickness is just in the song.
Yeah, it's longing for liberation to my mind.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the opening moments in the film called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction by Sophie Huber, in which Harry is singing a familiar song.
Since I left my baby behind on Blue Bayou, save a nickel, save a dime, work until the sun don't shine. Looking forward to happier times on Blue Bayou. I'm going back someday, come what may, to Blue Bayou, where the folks are fine and the world is mine on Blue Bayou, where those fishing boats with their sails afloat. If I could only see that familiar sunrise through sleepy eyes, how happy I'd be.
That's lovely.
Thank you.
Harry Dean Stanton with me on Soundcheck. That's from the film Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. There is a moment later in the film where you talk about preferring film to stage. But where is music in all this? Did you ever have any regret that you didn't pursue music as a kind of a performing thing?
I don't know, regrets. Regrets are somewhere unhealthy, regretting. But if I do get in the unhealthy state, I regret not following my musical career more. I've had chances to record albums, which I haven't done. And I've sung with a lot of great people, Christofferson, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan.
Some of those people appear in the film, again called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction, which, by the way, is now open here in New York, opens in L.A. tomorrow, and nationwide on September 27th. One of the things that comes out during the course of the film, and maybe listeners are already getting a hint of it, is that you don't tend to be a sentimental guy. You know, you don't have time for homesickness and regret. But the songs you sing tend to be very sentimental songs, and you really seem to kind of inhabit them when you're singing them.
Oh, yeah? Well, thank you.
Do these songs reach an emotional place that you don't normally go otherwise when you're not singing?
Of course, yeah, every singer does that. It's the same for all singers, I think.
Hmm.
Most singers, anyway.
Good singers.
Yeah.
you want to play a song for us here in the Soundcheck
Which
studio?
Which one did you want to hear?
Well, what do you got?
Let's see. I think I can do it in this key.
Okay.
This means this how far away I am from the land where I was born. Intense nostalgia invades my mind. Couldn't sing that in English. Qué lejos estoy del suelo donde nacido. Intensa nostalgia invade mi pensamiento. Al verme tan solo y triste cual otro viento. Quisiera llorar, quisiera morir de sentimiento. O tierra del sol, suspiro por verte. Ahora que lejos, yo vivo sin luz, sin amor. Al verme tan solo y triste cual al viento, quisiera llorar, quisiera morir de sentimiento.
Harry Dean Stanton, live on Soundcheck. What's the name of that song?
Canción Mixteca. It's from the Mixtec Indian.
So it's a Mexican song.
Mexico. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mariachi song.
That you wouldn't have known that growing up in Kentucky, did
no.
you? Did you learn that in L.A.?
I learned that later on in life.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Harry Dean Stanton. The film, Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction, opening nationwide on September 27th. There is a very funny moment in this film when David Lynch walks in and kind of takes over Sophie's interview cards and starts asking you her questions.
Yeah.
One of which is, have you ever been married? And when you say no, he's left with the follow-up question, well, how did you meet your wife? And it's just very dry. It's like totally David Lynch.
Yeah. Now,
you and he have, I mean, you have a long relationship with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, we're close friends, yeah.
And he also is a big music fan and, you know, makes music himself.
Yeah, I think he writes songs too. Yeah.
Writes, produces. Well, I want to play this clip from the film. Again, it's called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. And this really gets to something we were talking about before, is the idea of like the kind of emotional content of these songs, whether that has any reflection on the person who's singing it. Listen to this clip.
Jack Nicholson called me. He said, Harry, I've got this part for you. Said his name is Blind Dick Riley. He wears a derby and a patch over one eye. He said, but I don't want you to do anything in the movie. And I was already thinking along those lines anyway. And playing Harry Dean Stanton. But he said, let the wardrobe do the character.
Yeah.
That sort of solidified my whole approach to from then on.
How would you describe yourself?
As nothing. There's no self.
That's Harry Dean Stanton, my guest on Soundcheck, with David Lynch.
Yeah.
Sort of taking over the scene there from director Sophie Huber, the film called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. So there's another moment in the film when you mentioned Kris Kristofferson before.
Yeah.
And he appears late in the movie and plays a bit of this song, The Pilgrim, Chapter 33, which he says is at least in part about you.
Yeah, and Dennis Hopper and a couple of other people.
Johnny Cash, I think he mentions. Yeah. Do you hear what he's talking about when you hear this song?
I think that's where she got the title to this documentary, Partly Fiction.
It is, yeah.
Partly Truth, Partly Fiction.
Uh-huh.
So, on his lonely way back home, looking, what's that line?
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear Kris Kristofferson singing it from the film Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction.
His jacket and his jeans, wearing yesterday's misfortune like a smile. Once he had a future full of money, love, and dreams, which he spent like they were going out of style. And he keeps right on a change for the better or the worse, searching for a shrine he's never found, never knowing if believing is a blessing or a curse, or if the going up was worth the coming down. He's a poet, he's a picker, he's a prophet, he's a pusher, he's a pilgrim and a preacher, and a problem when he's stoned. He's a walking contradiction, partly truth and partly fiction, taking every wrong direction on his lonely way.
That's good.
That is. That's Kris Kristofferson in the film.
Yeah, he's a great poet.
Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. That's where the title comes from. Do you hear yourself in that song?
Well, I can resonate with that.
Yeah. The song is called The Pilgrim, Chapter 33, from Kris Kristofferson. How did you and Kristofferson meet?
I don't remember. I did his first movie. I got him in his first movie. What was the name of it? Cisco Pike.
Cisco.
Yeah. That's the one, yeah.
So you got him the job in that?
Yeah.
So the
producers called me and said that we can't get Kris to come in. Can you get him to come in? So I met him at Troubadour Bar, and we were drinking, and I talked to him and got him to come in. And I read with him and got his first job. And I think I talk about that in the film, don't I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How I got him in the movie.
Yeah.
Broke a beer bottle over the doorknob.
Right.
The director comes running out and says...
You have to scare him.
Says, I want you to scare him. Now, here he's a boxer, a helicopter driver, all-American hero, and I'm supposed to scare him. So I see a beer bottle over in the corner. He knocks open the door. I break the beer bottle on the knob of the door and grab him by the shirt and put it under his chin. He was scared.
And agreeable to most anything at that point, I imagine.
Yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton is the subject of this really terrific documentary by Sophie Huber, which opens nationwide, although it's already open here in New York, on September 27th. It's called Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction. A lot of music, a lot of singing from you, Harry, during the course of the film.
Yeah.
And even after the movie is over, you're not done. You pull out an old Irish song as the credits are rolling. And I'm wondering if that's something you could play for us here in the studio today.
Danny Boy?
Danny Boy.
Let's see. This was written by a father who had lost two sons in two different wars. And this is his youngest son he's singing to. I used to think it was his mother for years. It's his father singing to his son going off to World War I. Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the leaves are falling, and it's you must go and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. For I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so. And if you come and all the leaves are dying, and I'm dead as dead I will may be, you'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an ave there for me. And I will hear those soft you tread above me, and all my dreams will warm and sweeter be. If you'll just bend and tell me that you love me, then I will sleep in peace until you come to me.
Harry Dean Stanton, live on Soundcheck with Danny Boy. You know, funny story. As you mentioned, that's a father singing to a son who's going off to the wars.
Yeah.
But that melody is English.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's still adopted by the
Irish.
Frederick Weatherly wrote it, I think.
Right. Right.
And he was I think he was English, but the Irish, it's become their national anthem.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry Dean Stanton has appeared in nearly 200 films and TV series, but as we've also learned, a passionate singer, harmonica player, guitarist, and subject of the new documentary, Harry Dean Stanton, Partly Fiction, open now in New York, in L.A. tomorrow, and nationwide on September 27th. Harry, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure talking with you.
They say that your hand can never touch mine, that a poor boy can't hope for a woman so fine.
Up next, a conversation with Frida Kelly, the Beatles' secretary, whose story is told in a new film called Good Old Frida. This is Soundcheck. As New York City's mayoral race trudges onward, Soundcheck invites you to get in on the action with our new challenge called Remix the Mayor. Go to soundcheck.org to download clips of New York City mayors past and present. They are yours to remix however you like. like this almost forgotten soundbite from Mayor Giuliani.
This excessive concern with little weasels is a sickness.
You have until Sunday, September 29th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern to enter your remix into the challenge. So do your civic duty and remix a mayor.
Love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please, love me do.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Chances are you know the story of the Beatles, four lads from Liverpool who made good. But a story you might not know is that of the Beatles' secretary, Freda Kelly. She was also a Liverpool teenager who chanced to meet the band and ended up working as their secretary and running their fan club for over a decade. A new film called Good Old Freda tells her story, and we're joined here in the studio by the film's subject, Freda Kelly. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
And director Ryan White. Ryan, good to have you here as well.
Thanks for having us.
I want to start with a clip from the film. This is Angie McCartney, Paul McCartney's stepmom, talking about Freda.
She's one of the last survivors of the whole Beatles era. And, you know, this story of Freda Kelly's will be surely one of the last true stories of the Beatles that you'll ever really hear.
So, Ryan, is that why you made this movie? Is Freda the last true Beatles story out there?
Well, I think it's really interesting because when I found out that Freda was the Beatles' secretary, I've known her my whole life. My uncle's actually in the film. He's Billy Kinsley of the Mersey Beats. And so I grew up knowing Freda and from weddings and family Christmases and things like that. But I did not know she was the Beatles' secretary. She really is that private about it. But when I started learning about her role and I found out not only is she one of the very few survivors from the original Inner Circle, she's the only one who has never gone down on the record. And so, you know, countless Beatles stories have been told, obviously. But I do think it's one of the last true stories, as Angie McCartney says, that's left to be told. And so it's been really special for me to be a part of that process with her, to leave that as a legacy for Freda's family, but also for Beatles fans as a last part of Beatles history.
And Freda, why has it taken so long? I mean, you know, you worked with the Beatles back in the day. How come that's not like, hi, my name's Freda. I used to work with the Beatles.
Well, first of all, I would say I'm Freda, but I wouldn't say I
know.
Worked with the Beatles.
Yeah.
But I had had offers over the years, but I just didn't want to do them. I just wanted to live my life as normal as I did. But then when my grandson came along, you know, my daughter started talking to me and other people, and I thought, well, before the memory box goes, I better put something down for Niall. His name is Niall.
I mean, one of the things that makes a good secretary is confidentiality, you know, sort of maintaining a sense of privacy. That must have been insanely difficult as Beatlemania was exploding.
Well, not really, because I was there before it exploded. Mm-hmm. And you just get into that way anyway. Even my job now, I've got to be confidential because I work for solicitors and you don't talk about the files that you work on. So I've always been that type of person anyway. I do like privacy.
The film is called Good Old Freda. It was released on video on demand this past weekend and opens this Friday at the Sunshine Cinema here in New York on Friday the 13th. There is, Ryan, an interesting moment where you ask Freda, we hear you off camera, asking her if she ever dated any of the Beatles. And Freda declines to answer.
Freda shuts me down.
Yeah, shuts you down pretty fast.
Freda has a very charming way of shutting people down whenever they cross the line, and I experienced that many times in our 40 hours of interviews. But, you know, Freda was 17 when she began the job. She grew up, you know, with the Beatles. They used to drive her home from their shows before they were famous. And so she was their age, basically. And so, as she says in the film, naturally she had crushes on them.
Now, you were, Freda, 17 when you first were taken to the cavern, the subterranean club where the Beatles were making a name for themselves. What was your first impression of them?
When I first went down and saw them, the excitement and everything about them, I wanted more. So I found out where they were playing, and I would go to as many bookings as I could.
Right.
And I definitely went to the cavern every other day when they were on.
So you were, as you mentioned a couple of times in the movie, a fan first.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And a fan to the end.
And a fan to the end, yeah.
And, Ryan, you were faced with the prospect of doing this movie about the Beatles' secretary and then having to go to the Beatles to try and get at least one Beatles song for the film. You ended up getting four. How did that happen?
Well, I had never made a Beatles film before, obviously, and so when I began that process, you start talking to other filmmakers or authors who have worked on Beatles products, and it was from the very beginning, this is going to be impossible. No one gets Beatles music.
Right.
So, but I wasn't going to just throw the towel in.
You have to get permission from the two surviving Beatles and the estates of the two deceased Beatles.
You do, and then a lot more than that as well. You know, it's a total testament to Frida that record executives would take my phone calls. And, you know, I think it's a testament to the way Frida lived her life that time after time, we kept getting yeses. And so we were a little baffled. We were just waiting for a no along the way to stop us in the tracks. And so one of my favorite parts of making the film was the phone call where I actually called Frida and said, this is incredible, but we just got any four Beatles songs that we want, we can use in this film. And I think she was screaming the phone so loud I had to move it away from my head.
I think I went to the ceiling.
And one of the ones you chose was I Saw Her Standing There. Well, she was just 17. Yeah. You know what I mean.
I wonder who they wrote that song about.
Let's hear a little bit.
Well, she was just 17.
Saw Her Standing There from the Beatles, one of the songs that Ryan White was given permission to use in his documentary Good Old Frida about Frida Kelly, former secretary to the Beatles. Both Ryan and Frida are with me on Soundcheck. The movie opens this Friday, the 13th, at Sunshine Cinema and is also available via video on demand. So, Frida, Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, hires you. It's like a dream job and must have made you the object of incredible jealousy from the other teenage girls in Liverpool and eventually beyond.
Yeah, probably, you know, but it never reached me.
Well, it seems like, but this is one of the things that struck me is everybody reached you. Sacks and, you know, bags and boxes of letters and stuff.
Yeah.
And you actually seem to have answered most of them.
Well, not just me. I did have helpers, but we got through all of it eventually.
How seriously did the Beatles take that part of their celebrity?
Well, they took it very seriously. I think, I'm not just saying it, but I think we were one of the best fan clubs, the way it was run and everything about it. And they certainly kept their eye on it. And anything I asked them to do, they always done. Because these fans put them... You know,
where they were.
Where. And
yeah.
And they realised that, you know. They never complained. I know it sounds as if I'm just saying it, but I'm not. It is the truth.
And people would ask for locks of hair, and someone sends you a pillowcase and says, could you have Ringo sleep on this?
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah, because I, you know, went to his home every week, asked his mom, you know, put that on the pillow, get him to sleep on it.
Well, now, Ryan, as amazing as it is that you were given your choice of four Beatles songs to include in the film, there is, at the beginning of the movie, something I've never heard before, which is, in essence, a fifth Beatles song.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about this Christmas record.
So those are the Christmas records that Frida used to put out just for the fan club. So they're these pretty rare records that would come out every Christmas. The one that we use at the beginning of the film is the one from 1963, which I think is the first one that they put out. And it's where the title of our film comes from, Good Old Frida. So the Beatles are singing Christmas songs, and then George Harrison says, we need to thank our secretary, Frida Kelly in Liverpool, and all the Beatles shout out in unison, good old Frida. So it's sort of become this memorialized line in Beatles folklore of good old Frida, and so I thought it was the perfect title for the film. Now, it could only be the title for the film if we could get permission to use the track, and so luckily, again, along with the Beatles music, Apple Records was willing to license us this very rare recording which opens our film, so you hear where good old Frida comes from and you hear her name come out of the Beatles' voices themselves.
Stephen, when the snow was on the ground, deep and crisp and even.
Thank you, Ringo. Thank you, Ringo. We'll phone you. I'm George Harrison. Nobody else has said anything yet about our fan club secretaries, Anne Collingham and Betty, you know, Rose. Not to mention Frida Kelly in Liverpool.
Get out, Frida!
So on behalf of us all, I'd just like to say a great big thank you to Anne, Bettina and Frida for all the hard work they've done. And we just hope you can go on pleasing you for a long time.
The Beatles' Christmas record from 1963. What did you think of that, Frida, when you first heard that?
Well, I was relieved because I had heard that they had mentioned me, but I didn't know what they'd said.
Mm.
And knowing them, I thought, oh, you never know, this could swing both ways. But I was relieved, and it is an honour, isn't it, to be mentioned in a record.
Now, how much bad behaviour did you witness as the secretary to the Beatles?
Well, there was bad behaviour between me and them over work, you know, but I didn't really notice a lot.
Uh-huh. So you were basically staying behind in the office, just someone had to mind the store while they were out becoming famous.
Did. I mean, I did go out on the road with them a few times.
Including the Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, I went there for a week. I could have stayed 2 weeks, but I had enough after the week of the madness.
Well, and Frida speaks her mind, and so those are some of the stories that we explore in the film that, you know, she has no censor on her mouth either, and so I think that's one of the reasons she lasted so long. Most people were fired from the Beatles circle at some point, and she's one of their longest-serving employees. One of my favorite stories in the film is when John Lennon fired her one time because she had been hanging out with another band, and she asked the other three Beatles if they were firing her too, and they said no, and so she looked at John Lennon and said, well, I'll just work for the other three. I'm not doing your work for you anymore, and made him get down on his knees and beg her to come back. And so I think she had those types of bad behavior run-ins with them, but that's what I love about Frida, is that there's two sides to her personality that most teenage girls probably wouldn't have been able to hold their own at that time, and she really could.
I have no elastic on my tongue.
Now, when Brian Epstein dies, Frida, you're quoted in Ryan's movie as saying that Paul McCartney thought he could use the Magical Mystery Tour to kind of keep the band together.
Yeah, something had to be done to just to hold us all together.
Now, it didn't ultimately work, but for a couple of weeks, did it seem like maybe that's what was happening?
Well, when we went away, I mean, it was fun in the beginning, and Paul was really trying. You know, you've got to give him credit for that.
The idea was kind of this kind of madcap trip from Liverpool to Blackpool?
Well, it was supposed to be a day trip out for Ringo with an aunt. And the storyline was sort of half there.
Right.
And then it was just changed every night in the, you know, a little bit of a mishmash at times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been reissued. You know, people can find it on DVD. Mm-hmm. Will we find you in it?
A little bit.
Oh, yeah, you'll find her in it. But Frida's always hiding in the shadows. She never wanted to be on
camera. I never like getting my photograph taken.
She actually opted. It was always a goldmine whenever you found a picture of Frida, because she was always kind of in the shadows. But you'll find her in lots of the footage, for sure.
All right. And you'll also find songs like this one from the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour.
You say goodbye. I say
from the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour, Hello, Goodbye. The Magical Mystery Tour is part of the story of the Beatles, part of the story of Frida Kelly, who, as a Liverpool teenager, became a secretary to Brian Epstein and became the manager of the Beatles fan club for 11 years, Frida?
Yeah, just under 11 years.
And Ryan White, the director of the movie Good Old Frida, also here with us on Soundcheck. And we're talking about the making of the movie and the story behind it, Frida. In terms of being a woman in that industry, you know, there weren't many women around you working in music back then.
No, we were all admin, weren't we? The women were the admin.
Right, so once a secretary, always a secretary. Yeah, that was basically... Yeah.
In those days it was.
Yeah.
Like all the press offices, they were all men. And
Right. Yeah. But did you ever have designs on moving elsewhere in the organization?
No, I just I stayed because I liked my job and I liked doing what I was doing.
And when it finally came time to wrap it up, that final column, that final letter to the fan club, how hard was that to write?
Quite difficult, you know, but it had to be done. You know, I was leaving and I didn't want them writing in again because, you know, I didn't want them writing in and nobody would answer. So I had to say, please don't write again, you know.
From the film Good Old Frida, this is that last letter to the Beatles fan club.
Well, this is it. John, Paul, George and Ringo have each gone their separate ways and they are no longer collectively an item. There it is, 11 years. 11 years in which we have become a very strong, happy and close circle of friends. There will not be another official fan club for the Beatles as individual artists. Please do not write again. Yours faithfully, Frida Kelly.
It actually made me sad reading it this time because I hadn't
read
it
for the movie,
you know, for years.
So how much of this were you surprised to remember when Ryan came with the camera and you're up in the attic opening boxes?
Well, because I hadn't looked at them for years, you know. But once I started talking, and he must have had a nightmare with me because I would tell a tale and then while I'm telling that tale, I'd remember another one. You know, one tale, like, opened another memory box.
Well, the memories came flowing back and they are now captured in the movie called Good Old Frida, which opens on Friday the 13th, this Friday at the Sunshine Cinema here in New York, but is also available via video on demand, telling the story of Frida Kelly, who worked as the Beatles' secretary and manager of their fan club for over a decade. It's directed by Ryan White. Both Ryan and Frida, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
I will always feel the same. Love you forever and forever.
Up next, the band Deer Tick shows off a darker, almost punk-like new sound on their latest album called Negativity. They'll play some of it in a live set here in the studio next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. After 9 years and 5 full-length albums, the band Deer Tick has become known for 2 things. One is their freewheeling approach to rock, folk, alt-country. The other is their reputation as a hard-partying group of road warriors who are out playing live for most of each year. They still somehow found time to write and record their latest album called Negativity, which comes out on September 24th. And then promptly hit the road again. Today, they're here in the Soundcheck studio to play some of their new songs live for us. This one is called The Rock.
Through the window of our love,
That is the band Deer Tick, live on Soundcheck with their song The Rock, which comes from their new album, Negativity, out on September 24th, but we're getting a bit of a preview of it here in the Soundcheck studio today. Deer Tick is John McCauley at our piano, but also singing and playing the guitar.
Hello.
Ian O'Neill, also playing guitar.
Yeah, how's it going?
Robbie Crowell at the keyboard and doing some backing vocals. Dennis Ryan's behind our drum kit, also doing some backing vocals. And Chris Ryan playing the bass. And, John, a little bit of misdirection at the beginning of that song there. You know, it sets you up to expect one sound world, and then suddenly you're in another.
Yeah, I was two separate songs to begin with.
Oh, really? It was a kind of a day in the life sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess. Though I don't think my song is as good as A Day in the Life.
So it was two different songs. They get conflated into one. The album is called Negativity. Now, is that also a bit of misdirection, or was this really like coming from a kind of a dark place for you guys?
Well, I mean, it sort of comes from a dark place, but the title of the record is supposed to kind of be a bit tongue-in-cheek, I suppose. It's such a grand statement. It's kind of silly, you know?
Yeah. So you're flying your flag for feeling bad.
Yeah, and on the record cover, we were literally flying a banner.
So, that's not like a photo. For folks who haven't seen the cover yet, it's an airplane trailing behind it a big banner that says Negativity.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. So you guys actually paid... Ian, you paid an airplane to fly.
The pilot's name was Mark Simmons. He's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
So you knew the pilot.
Good beach in Westerly, Rhode Island.
He liked to fly kind of questionable messages up in the air, too. So he jumped at the chance to do it.
Okay.
One of the banners that he's flown in the past was once a cheater, always a cheater. That was one.
I hope that was during, like, election season or something. That would have been great. So, John, what was going on when you guys, were you off the road by the time you started writing this record?
I don't know, those couple of years, you know, had some serious ups and downs for me.
Right. So, I mean, I mentioned before, you know, you guys had this sort of hard partying reputation. You're like clean and sober now. Is that part of what's going on here?
I try to stay away from the liquor, and I enjoy a couple beers. I had three beers yesterday. That's about average for me right now.
Okay.
No more drugs, though. That was where things were getting really out of, I don't know.
But isn't that one of the perils of being out? I mean, you guys are on the road constantly.
Well, I was just thinking about how, you know, this tour probably will be a little bit challenging in that department. I was talking about this two-night stand we did in Chicago a couple months ago and how much free cocaine I got from the audience.
From the audience?
Yeah, just...
Having sort of written all these songs and released this album, has Negativity made you feel better?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Right. Negativity is some good vibes going on there.
All right, we're speaking with and listening to the band Deer Tick, who are performing under their alter ego as Deervana, the Nirvana cover band, this Friday night, Friday the 13th at Brooklyn Bowl. They'll be playing a 20th anniversary set of In Utero, right?
Yep.
Great record from 1993. But playing their own songs for us here in the studio today. Let's hear Hey Doll. Once again, this is Deer Tick, a song from the forthcoming record Negativity, live on Soundcheck.
1, 2, 3, 4. I used to know you perhaps too well. All my emotions puzzled neath your spell. When you roamed, I felt high, and your place was all my pride. Catch my breath, sweet goodbyes, a waste of all my time. I get so down on myself. You talk like somebody else.
song's called Hey Doll, and you will find it shortly on the new album by the band Deer Tick. The album's called Negativity, out on September 24th. But we're getting a chance to hear some of these songs live. This song is called The Dreams in the Ditch. Are you okay over there, Robbie? You ready to go? All right. Lots of keyboards being moved here in the studio. It's Deer Tick, live on Soundcheck. Deer Tick, live on Soundcheck, The Dreams in the Ditch. It'll appear on their next record, Negativity, when it comes out on the 24th. John, how do you decide when Deer Tick, when the time is right for Deer Tick to be Deervana?
Well, I don't know if any time is appropriate.
But you do it anyway.
We started doing it for fun, and then it got a little out of control. So we stopped it for a while. Or we stopped it indefinitely, I guess. And then this In Utero thing came up, and that's my favorite Nirvana album. So
you know, we it's the 20th anniversary. We did a show on In Utero earlier this year to mark the occasion, and it's a great opportunity to run through the record. So that's what you guys will be doing.
It's all in fun, you know.
At Brooklyn Bowl on Friday the 13th. So Ian, when you guys are on the road, who controls the music in the van?
I want to give the credit to our drummer, Dennis, for this. The music in the van, or at least for a while, we had some insane mixtapes, which ranges from everything from, like, I don't know.
Maybe anywhere from Herbie Hancock to Meatloaf to Steely Dan and beyond.
You mean beyond the 1970s?
Not really.
We get some weird 90s pop on. We play it before our live sets, and everybody gets a little confused before we play.
Sometimes I've been making these mixes called big mixes, where I just literally take, you know, five songs and just put them all in a garage band, just have them play simultaneously.
Nice.
I just search through my iTunes by the length of the song, so I'll pick three songs that are the same length, or five songs or whatever. So put them all together.
That's your avant-garde John Cage
kind
of thing. Yeah,
so bad. Yeah. It's great.
All right. That kind of explains a lot. The new album really is all over the map. The band is Deer Tick, and they've been playing for us live on Soundcheck today. Guys, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, man.
This is Soundcheck. You're just a hero, a hero in a chain. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, we talk with musician, songwriter, and record producer Butch Walker. He's worked with artists like Pink, Weezer, and Taylor Swift. He's also the subject of a new documentary called Butch Walker Out of Focus. We'll talk about his life and music. And we'll have a live performance from the British electropop artist and producer known as Ebony Bones. That's going to do it for the show today. Be with us again tomorrow at 9. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.